Hello everyone, I'm Jane Rimlarkin and I'm from Action Coach. And today we have a very special guest with us, Brett Phillips of 3Deep. 3Deep is a leading luxury branding and creative agency. Welcome, Brett. It's great to have you here today on the Business Spotlight Series.
Thanks, Jane. Great to be here.
Wonderful. So Brett, to start off with, could you tell us a little bit about 3Deep and the work you do?
Absolutely. I started 3Deep in 1996, 28 years ago this year. We focus almost exclusively on the super premium to luxury space. We are a creative and branding agency. And as part of our remit, we work with quite extraordinary businesses and people to create extraordinary brands. And we've been doing that across the arts, cultural sector, retail sectors, fine jewelry, fashion, architecture, and design. So it's been a very manic and rewarding 28 years.
Sounds wonderful. That sounds really fascinating. So do you mind sharing with us, Brett, one of your recent projects that you worked on that you are, you know, you can say you're particularly proud of?
Sure. Well, I think maybe, I mean, there's a lot of recent projects, but I think that there's a couple of defining ones that have been really enjoyable and really rewarding for our whole team. I mentioned that we work a lot in the arts cultural space. One of our clients here in Victoria, the National Gallery of Victoria, is one of the oldest galleries in the country and the most visited. And we had the pleasure of working with their team to reposition and rebrand the organisation under the stewardship of Tony Elwood, it'd be now 5 years ago. And then we've subsequently rolled out and had the pleasure of doing all of their major campaigns for the gallery since. So mm-hmm. Everything from, you know, the Alexander McQueen retrospective to Victor and Rolf to Ai Weiwei Warhol. There's a lot of work that we've done in that space off the back of, I guess, 14 or 15 years of really focusing in on the performing arts and the arts cultural sector more broadly. So that's been a really defining project for our office insofar as we've worked on, you know, all of the most successful campaigns in that company or that organization's history. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see the work visible and performing and visceral and beautiful all at the same time.
Sounds wonderful. So you get a lot of satisfaction because you create this beautiful art and the branding for these wonderful organizations.
Yeah, well, that's the front end that you see. Obviously, there's a lot of hard work and strategic thinking and planning and management and everything that goes behind those projects in order to realize the front end beauty that everyone gets to see and enjoy. So, you know, I'd temper that by saying, it's nice to see the kind of aesthetic and the beauty of the campaigns come to life, but it's all underpinned by serious hard work and strategy.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. So so you've been in the business for about 28 years or so, yeah?
Yeah, coming up to 30.
30 years, wow. So if you had to go back, say, to square one, what would you do different, Brett?
Oh, tough, good question. I mean, the majority, it'd be remiss of me not to say that the majority of every mistake and every decision that we've made has led us to the point we are now, which has been a good thing. I think what I've been musing about most recently would be, it would have been nice to identify our North Star or our niche or our, you know, what we refer to as our brand position earlier on in our journey. Mm-hmm. It was something, you know, we were always doing this kind of work at this kind of level for these kinds of clients, but it took a lot longer than I would have liked to solidify our role within a broader, you know, competitive and peer landscape and really plant a flag that says this is what we stand for, this is what we believe in, this is the caliber of the work, this is the category we, you know, that we're focused on, and these are the clients that we'd like to champion and work with within that category. It took a little bit longer probably than most to kind of really cement that position that was differentiating and ultimately clarifying, mm-hmm. that aligned our business vision with our output. So I think that was probably one of the things that I would have liked to have cemented earlier.
Yeah, which is fair enough as well. But it's, you know, the whole business ownership is an evolving process as well, right? You're learning and you continue tweaking your strategies and trying
Daily,
to
hourly, hourly, by the minute, by the hour, by the day, by the week, by the month. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, in the changing landscape of business today, how do you stay ahead of the curve, in what your customers' demands are, obviously the competitive landscape as well? So, do you mind sharing one or two of your strategies?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think it's as much, I mean, from a strategy perspective, it's first and foremost a cultural thing. So we now know that we sit, thankfully, in a very rarefied space amongst our competitors and peers in this country, whereby there is only a handful of agencies of our ilk and caliber doing work in our category at this level.
Mm-hmm.
First, it was recognizing that that was the case. And secondly, it was understanding that with that comes great responsibility to understand the nuances of your category, have the knowledge to understand how to operate and how to shape your culture in such a way that you can perform and deliver at the apex of that category. So mm-hmm. I think first and foremost, it's a cultural thing and an awareness and understanding thing. And then of course, it's about going about implementing initiatives and programs that really, I guess, cement your position and clarify your position to market.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those strategies for us 5 years ago was to create and establish a business called Neue Luxury. And that business concerned itself with, it was a media and experiences and retail business that concerned itself with and surrounded itself with those at the vanguard of luxury and creativity. Mm-hmm. And that really was a megaphone to broadcast our desired position and to surround ourselves with those within that category that, were at the vanguard and the bleeding edge of luxury.
Mm-hmm.
And then, having the confidence to pursue that and to the clarity to communicate it, and then the wherewithal to stand by it and deliver upon the promise.
Yeah.
And then, of course, back it up with the evidence. One has to have, a significant body of work and evidence to back up the claim. And I think that's part of our strength now, close to 30 years, is that we have a significant body of work that validates the promise that we make.
That sounds wonderful. I guess as well is, a lot has to do, a company's success has to do with your team as well, the people behind the business owner and the business.
Sure does.
Yeah. So, how do you, number one, how do you choose your team members, that aligns to your value and your vision, and especially in this labor market at the moment?
Well, that's very tough. So I think that it's always tough to find people who align with and have the knowledge about and the wherewithal to pursue work at this level outside of a really tight labor market. Add in the layer of kind of complexity of what's going on at the moment in terms of generational change and work-life culture and balance and all these sorts of things, and it becomes even more acute.
Mm-hmm.
The short answer is it's very hard to find people who, align with our way of seeing the world and also the relentlessness of how we approach our work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anyone that's ever worked in our office will testify to the fact that we are relentless in our pursuit. So even after I was reminiscing before this interview, and even, in 2009, just before COVID, mm-hmm. out of the 365 days in the year, we worked 351 of them.
Wow.
So we are driven and obsessed with making sure that we outwork, outsmart, and outdeliver on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we are very, very competitive. Now, that's not for everyone, but certainly, the ground that we've covered over the past 28 years, I think, is testament to the fact that, we're relentless in our pursuit, and we are, you know, very objectively objective and you know, measured on who we look for and what their role is in our business. Mm-hmm. And as I said, that's, you know, they're a rare diamond to find.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the things you touched about is that work-life balance, you know. So I know as a business owner, it's a constant juggle for us as how do we balance our personal life and our work life. You know, how do you do it, Brett?
Well, I don't believe in balance. I don't believe in moderation. I think moderation is for cowards. I think for me personally, there is very little delineation between work and life, design, creativity, culture, art, fashion. All of these things are kind of embedded in our DNA, and we seamlessly move between those things, both personally and professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, always on, always looking, always focused, always hungry. You know, there's some of the attributes that would define how we go about shepherding in our business. And again, that's just us. That doesn't work for everyone. But
mm-hmm.
I don't see or believe in a delineation, to be honest. I draw inspiration and strength and respite and, you know, all those things that, you know, some people put into certain buckets. I draw them from just every day and doing business and you know, the diversity of projects and clients and people and everything that we meet. So again, that's not for everyone. That's just us, and
mm-hmm.
it's something that we're pretty tirelessly relentless about.
Yeah. No, that sounds awesome. I guess as well, you know, recently I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about, you know, if you have passion in what you do and you love what you do, it's not a job. You know,
yeah,
it's
well, that's the goal, isn't it? I kind of, I'd be lying if I said that some days weren't harder than others, and it didn't feel like that all the time. But I just think there's a lot of, I mean, it's interesting just reflecting on our kind of this discussion today. I think there's a lot of white noise in the world and in the business world, particularly, and a lot of bravado and hype and just general white noise about people kind of talking about, you know, talking the talk.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's very rare to find people that don't necessarily talk the talk, just walk the walk and deliver, mm-hmm. and actually then provide the evidence and let the work and let the outcomes do the talking. And I think that's been part of our culture the whole time. And particularly with new staff, as you mentioned a minute ago, the first thing I say to them is that, you know, you might not respect, you know, how every aspect of how we go about doing it, but you need to respect the chair, because mm-hmm. the you know, hundreds probably by now of people that have come before them that have built this business and this brand into what it is have, you know, left an indelible mark on their chair,
mm-hmm.
and they should respect the effort and endeavor and sacrifice and you know, the weekends lost and, you know, all the partners angry and all those sorts of things mm-hmm. for the work that they've done. So I don't think it's all about leadership. I think that we set the example,
mm-hmm.
and then I think it's up to the individual to kind of respect their chair.
I love that analogy. It sounds very impactful.
Yeah. I mean, and again, then, you know, client focused, it's about the work that we're, I mean, ultimately it's not just about us. It's about the work that we do for others. So I think, you know, David and I, my business partner, we've worked very long and hard to and strategically and thoughtfully to have the body of clients that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, we feel intimately connected to them and ultimately responsible for the success of their business
mm-hmm.
and the thing that they're doing as a service-based business. So I think it's not just about respecting our values and culture and vision. It's kind of making sure that it's a twofold scenario where they're respecting our clients' values and culture and business.
No, absolutely. It's about collaboration, isn't it? Working
together. Yeah, I think so. And not everyone, you know, not everyone really focuses on who, you know, they, I mean, it's quite easy to go out there and get work and just work for anybody. But, you know, we were quite deliberate within our first year of business to identify who we didn't want to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of projects we didn't want to work on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you know, being that curatorial and kind of doing the hard yards, this, you know, to ensure that we could still put food on the table, even with that principled kind of approach, you know, is a you know, a worthy thing that any new staff or team member should be aware of.
No, absolutely, yeah. So it's really interesting, you know, you kind of was very selective as to who you didn't want. So it kind of allowed you to know who you wanted to be your clients.
Yeah, absolutely.
So even earlier on when you made that strategic decision, this is what we want, how would you attribute your growth to over the 30 odd years? Is it because you were very specific on who your market was or who your niche was? Is that could be a reason why you've been so successful in that space?
Oh, look, I think there was a couple of things. I think that we early on, and to be honest, I think that it was more about working on things that stimulated you creatively. So we did a lot of work in the performing arts early, and we were working with, you know, dance, theatre, opera, ballet, those sorts of things. And they were really visceral art forms, and they were kind of, it's really beautiful to be a part of working on those things. So at the start, we were kind of jumping around working across multiple categories without an understanding of really what it meant. And I think the first 5 years or so was about finding your feet and understanding, you know, how to do things and who to work for, because it was really, we started the business straight out of college, so we hadn't worked anywhere else until that point. I was 21 at the time, so you just had to figure it out. And then I think the next 5 years was then starting to ask yourself, actually, you know, within these various spaces, what kind of work and what level of work do we want to do, and what kind of clients align with our, you know, moral, ethical, creative, aesthetic kind of benchmarks and boundaries, and then starting to refine from there. And again, we lived in the studio for the first 5 years. We didn't pay ourselves any money. We, you know, we bought more books than we did, you know, paid ourselves in salary. It was all sorts of crazy little sacrifices, worked, you know, 7 days a week. And then you just, if you were smart and observant, then you would filter from that pool and say, actually, this is our target market, and this is the clients that I think are being attracted towards us, and then really consolidating and finding more of them and networking. And in the old days, it was all literal kind of social networking at events and functions and things. We didn't have, you know, there's no social media or back in those days where we could broadcast a message to a huge group of people. So it was beating the drum on the ground and going and finding like-minded people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So obviously it's been 30 years. So when you look back, what was the highlight of your career?
Well, I hope it's yet to come.
Not just for you now.
I think there's been many, and inherently, I guess the interesting thing about that question is inherently we're not nostalgic. Mm-hmm. So I never take time to look back and celebrate the things that we've done. I'm too focused on the now and on the kind of, you know, the future of things. And I guess the time will come to be nostalgic and, you know, when we can sit back and say, okay, that was great, or, you know, that trip was fantastic, or that outcome was incredible. There's been a couple of seminal moments. We did some work with Louis Vuitton out of Japan where Madonna was involved, and, you know, we did a great exhibition in Louis Vuitton in Roppongi Hills for the launch of their store. That was really seminal because it helped us solidify and plant the flag within the luxury space, and you know, all of those jobs at that level provide the evidence to back up your claim that, you know, that even if you haven't been able in the early days to physically have outcomes to justify your belief in yourself or the position that you want to own, each one of those kind of projects provides the, you know, the impetus and the evidence to kind of keep going. So, you know, there's been a lot of international work. There's, you know, for some serious clients, there's been a lot of domestic work that, you know, when I've walked past an institution or a, you know, like the Australian Ballet, for instance, I always wanted to do something in the performing arts, and we ended up working with the Australian Ballet, the peak organisation, for 14 years, and did nearly 70 campaigns for them over a 14-year period. So, you know, everyone at a particular level that I've wanted to pursue and work with, I've almost ticked the, in Australia at least, I've almost ticked all those boxes.
That's
kind of nice. And again, the challenge is to set the bar higher and go after, you know, the next and the new and the next, really.
Absolutely, yeah. But I guess also it's a, you know, it is a proud moment when you know you've been part of that as well, isn't it? Like, you know, I think like an architect, you know, he goes, drives by the house that he, you know, he designed. It's a proud moment for him as well because it's part of the journey. It's part of the history, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're I'm interested. It's interesting. I mean, we could talk all day about this, but we're quite egoless in a way. Like, and it's part of not being nostalgic or romantic about things. In that, like, we recently did a campaign for the National Gallery of Victoria, the Alexander McQueen Mind, Mythos and Muse campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd long admired Alexander McQueen as a fashion designer and always wished and hoped that we'd done something for him while he was still alive. And, of course, that didn't transpire. But in retrospect, you know, in kind of, you know, we've got to work on this campaign, you know, post his death. And in a way it feels like I've just kind of become that little bit closer to the work and to what the, you know, the impact he had. So, you know, maybe it's nostalgia, maybe it's ego. I'm not sure. We don't ever dig through the archive and throw our hands up and say how amazing that was.
Yeah, which is fair enough. That could be one of the reasons why you're so successful.
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Maybe why I'm not as successful as we need to be. Who knows?
Okay, now that sounds wonderful. So you know, a little bit about, you know, we learned a little bit about you, a little bit about your business. Can you tell us like one of the biggest challenges you're facing at the moment, if there is any?
Oh, there's lots and lots every day. I think one of the challenges is probably a cultural and a staffing one. I think in a post-COVID world and combined with generational change, I think it's interesting to see what's happening to the business landscape in the tussle between, you know, flexibility, freedom and focus and discipline. We come from quite an old school world where, you know, this, and it's part of this relentless pursuit, you know, we're at the office, you know, at 7 a.m. and we're just relentless on it all day. And then we don't leave till, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And we're collaborating in person and we're, you know, we're driving things and we're having all these beautiful serendipitous moments of creativity. And, you know, you might walk past somebody on the wall and say something or might trigger something. And I think we're now in this point in the kind of history of business and culture where those moments are being diffused in favor of remote working or, you know, these new ways of working. And I'm not 100% convinced in our industry at our level with our kind of work that's the best solution.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a really interesting challenging time to you know, to navigate in terms of you know, the changing cultural landscape of business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be our biggest challenge for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with more as well, because I think it's what the business requires and, you know, and the resources to match it, isn't it? More
than and I think, I mean, that's of course different for everyone. There's no one size fits all. I mean, we're doing this interview over Zoom and it's fantastic and it's changed our world for the better and claimed half our week back in terms of travel. But I think that in the creative services industry where there's a lot of serendipity involved in the exchange of ideas in person that mm-hmm. can't be relayed at a distance, I think that's going to provide some challenges for the new generation of businesses like ours. And I think I'm grateful that we've been able to cover as much ground as we have and produce as much work as we have now, because I think it's only going to get harder to do it at that level.
Mm.
And maybe that's part of our competitive advantage in that we've realized some incredible work because of the landscape that we've come from, not the current one.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you. So so you're Melbourne based, and you know, obviously you've got other offices or?
Yeah, we do. We have an office in Sydney, which is also combines a sister agency that we own, who is dedicated kind of digital marketing services. We have, I think, seven in that business. We have a North American office, which is more of a production office, which handles a lot of our campaign image making and things like that, for the fashion weeks out of New York, et cetera. But Melbourne is our kind of spiritual home. That's where we have all of our staff. We have nine now in our Melbourne office. Before COVID, we had 16. That was quite challenging for all of us. But we've got a big enough footprint to be able to facilitate the work at our level, but not so big that it becomes cumbersome or burdensome in terms of the work that we do.
Sounds awesome. So, Brett, would you like to share with our audience something about your business or nothing? What something you're looking forward to the future, or how can we support you?
Look, I think really from my perspective, it's about ensuring, I mean, my focus is to ensure that we're talking to the right people, not everybody. I think, you know, no doubt some of the people watching, you know, our kind of work and our culture and our approach will resonate with, and some it won't, and that's fine. You know, there's a great sort of proverb that says, know first oneself and then adorn oneself accordingly. Mm-hmm. And we know that we're not right for everyone. We know that we are very right for some people. And then, you know, that's a double-sided coin. I just hope that our, you know, target audiences recognize the value of what we do, the difference of what we do, and that it aligns with, you know, what they're hoping to achieve with their own business. And if that's the case, then ultimately that's a great starting point.
Absolutely. So, Brett, thank you very much for joining us on Business Spotlight Series. It was an absolute delight to hear
more. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.